You're listening to Money Never Sleeps Radio. In your face.
What we got here is a failure to communicate.
Oh, have I got your attention now?
Greed, for lack of a better word, is good.
You know what I mean?
Money to be made in a place like this.
Money never sleeps, pal.
You're crazy. Don't run when you lose. Don't whine when it hurts.
You know what it takes to sell real estate?
It takes brass, 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 brass.
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
All right, welcome to Money Never Sleeps. This is a show where we speak about anything and everything that impacts the flow of money from around the corner to around the world. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Look, the topic at hand is private equity, innovation in private equity. I know that a lot of you probably, you know, you watch the news, you get your news feeds, and you see what's happening in the space. You have private equity firms that are they're taking companies private. They're publicly traded companies that are taking private, or they're creating, you know, roll-ups, which that means that they're taking a few companies, bringing it together to create one bigger company that's either horizontally or vertically integrated for growth purposes. You have private equity firms that are involved in a lot of different areas. You know, you have LBO firms, you have growth capital, venture capital, mezzanine, distressed debt, real estate private equity, you know, like the Blackstones of the world. You have infrastructure private equity, you have fund of funds, you have industry consolidation, as we spoke about, as far as, you know, rolling companies up or having a merger situation on acquisition binge. It all depends on what they're doing. You have private equity firms, a lot of them that do a lot of different things. I want to focus on the innovation part, because what has been done for quite some time. You know, the bootstrap deals, that's something that was around for a while. Basically, you know, Henry Kravis, as most should know, he is the grandfather or the godfather of the leveraged buyout. He perfected it. You know, that's his sandbox, and he created a vehicle that allowed him and still allows the firm KKR to do a lot of strategic deals. Innovation, that was innovative. You know, technology innovation is another part of the private equity space that a lot of people don't speak about. You have firms that have both, not quietly and very quietly, they've entered the crypto space. You know, you have the BlackRocks of the world. You know, they entered with a boom. You know, they are probably the singular reason why we have Bitcoin ETFs today. You have, you know, I just mentioned KKR. You have KKR, you know, they're doing things quietly. And basically, they've got involved in the institutional end of the crypto business. And there are a lot of other firms that are doing a lot of different things, you know, with high yield notes. Basically, you know, they call them junk bonds, but they're high yield situations. You know, they are coming back into vogue. You know, the leveraged buyout. You have a lot of companies out there that have, you know, they have value, you know, but they're probably not run properly, or they need something else, or maybe they need to make an acquisition, or maybe the operators want to, you know, the management wants to buy out the company, you know, whatever the case may be. But the leveraged buyout is definitely a key component and what we're going to be seeing in the near future. And I think innovation in that space is going to be prevalent. You know, utilizing debt instruments and actually tokenizing them could be a big punch in the arm. And I don't mean just going and creating some random token for a debt and, you know, calling it a day. I'm talking about having something that is strategic, that could, you know, adhere to what regulations may be in place right now, so that, you know, it opens up a lot of doors, I believe, you know, because for the issuers of this, it is going to eliminate the monotony. It's going to increase efficiency. It's going to lower their cost basis. You know, because if you're streamlining the debt issuance, process, you know, basically, you know, you're eliminating the intermediaries and the manual processes and, avoiding the delays and the high fees that are associated with this. And that is value. Okay, automating these tasks, reducing the cost and speeding up that issuance process is a big punch in the arm for whoever the issuer is, whether it's a private equity firm, whether it's a company that is issuing debt. But I think that there is something really there. You can improve liquidity. You know, when you have tokenized debt, these are tokens that can easily be traded on secondary markets. You know, it increases liquidity for investors, allows issuers to tap into a wider pool of potential investors. This can make debt financing more accessible and attractive. And this is why I see this as being the next iteration of things that are going to occur. And it's going to happen in private equity, you know, and this is, there's no avoiding it. It's going to happen. You know, now you hear a lot about fractional ownership with art and so on and so forth. The same thing with debt. You know, if you have tokenized debt, you know, basically that can be fractionalized. It can be divided into small units, enabling fractional ownership, you know, and, you know, basically it's promoting inclusion. It allows any investor that can, you know, to get involved in these debt issues, issuances that happen at whatever level they feel comfortable with. You know, it allows them to participate, and that's the inclusion part of it. Another thing that it does is you're enhancing this transparency and security, and that's a big thing with blockchain. And I am personally a big advocate of blockchain technology and how it can be integrated into traditional finance. And by doing this, you are actually going and providing more transparency, not only for investors, for the general public, even for regulators to look and see and say, hey, there's no hiding here. There's no, you know, under the counter deals, there's nothing that you can do. Everything is open that anyone can see. Okay, and by doing that, you're able to track the ownership. So, you know, there's no dirty deals going on. You can basically build greater confidence and integrity of the debt instrument, showing that, hey, this is what it is. This is what's out there. Everything is transparent, and basically it brings forth, and this is what I love about it, it brings forth the fair market pricing part of it. And I wrote a paper on it. You guys should actually take time to go look at it. And if you go to fjapartners.com, it's on there. It'll give you some insight onto fair market pricing and what that's all about. And I think we need more of that across, you know, the bond market, across the stock market, just in general. And I think that this is going to be a step in the right direction as it relates to the private equity sector with doing leveraged buyouts and integrating digital assets into this area, because I feel it's going to unlock a plethora of different opportunities that weren't there before. Okay, and this is an important thing for a lender. In this environment, and for a lender, it can be a big plus, because not only do they have the opportunity to actually have the debt secured by whatever company is being acquired, there's also the possibility to have digital assets as a second barrier, which gives them greater confidence. And again, I think these things are going to happen. And one of the cool things is that if you have a tokenized debt, you can have it that you have programmable interest payments that go out. And again, those can be in digital assets as well. But it's something that's automatic. You don't have to depend on, you don't have to clip a coupon to do a thing. It just automatically happens. Okay. And look, for investors, you have investors that are, you know, all over the world. They want access. They want access. Okay. So by doing this, you're giving them greater access. You can have a company in Texas that have a debt offering that may get investors all the way from Australia or wherever else in the world, just because they created an accessible vehicle. They don't have to just go on one exchange. They can just go to the digital asset market and get involved if they want to. And that is a big plus. That's a big plus. You know, traditional, you know, exchanges, they work within their ecosystem, right? So if you do not have an account with a brokerage firm, you are not buying a stock on the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. You need an account to do a thing, okay? So when you have a digital asset exchange, something that's decentralized especially, that gives anyone the access to get involved without getting permission to do so. That opens up the doors and gives investors a little power that they can do things, you know, and also this is going to increase liquidity when it does happen. And it is happening as we speak, you know, but what's going to happen, investors are going to get increased liquidity. It's a process, but that comes with it. Okay. And basically, you know, for an investor, you know, you have diversification possibilities where they can get involved in one debt deal or multiple debt deals. They can, you know, take, you know, fractional ownership in this, that, and the other thing. You know, it gives them the ability to do more. And I think that is a big thing for this arena. You know, as I said, you're going to have a lot of innovation in the world of private equity in the coming few years. And the leveraged buyout market is going to be one of them. And the tokenization of debt, that's going to be very interesting. And I think that that's going to happen sooner than later. And when it does come forth, and I know it's going to come forth, when it does, it's going to open up a whole gateway of different possibilities, you know. But, you know, again, there are challenges there as well. You know, regulation. Regulation is a challenge, but it isn't, but it is, right? You know, we see that a lot with the crypto market as it is. But if you are adhering to regulation that is there in the way that you need to, right, you can actually go and really be ahead of the, in my opinion, you can be ahead of the curve, okay, and have made those pivots already because you've been doing it in the traditional way. You know, people think that the dependence on technology is a scary thing. It's really not. When you're dealing with a decentralized situation, you know, it is, yeah, you're, of course, dependent on technology, but it's not like something's going to go away. You know, that is something that is forever. You know, you have, you know, nodes that are run, you know, by multiple, you know, organizations or individuals globally. You know, like Bitcoin, for instance. You know, not that it would be used for this, but it could be used for this. You don't know. But with, let's say, Bitcoin, you have thousands of nodes out there. You have miners. You have all this stuff going on. So this strengthens that entire network. And by strengthening the network, basically you are bringing forth a vehicle that can be utilized not only for one thing, but for multiple things, and transitioning in some way some traditional aspects of the financial markets and kind of, you know, converging with the digital space. So I think that's going to be an important thing. Market volatility, well, that can be a concern when you're dealing with situations that are, how can I put it, you know, in the crypto space, you can have a token issued and you can go out there and put it on a centralized exchange, and then all of a sudden there's no support and things go sideways. You know, with debt tokenization, the interesting thing there is that there's going to be stability there. It doesn't need to float around, and it doesn't need to be, you know, you can have a supply and demand situation there. However, you know, when you issue a debt, just like in traditional markets, they're not just going to, you know, tank because this is what they want to do. You know, you have checks and balances in play, and once that's instituted into the smart contracts, it is going to give it a lot more stability. So I don't think the market volatility as far as, you know, the debt, tokenized debt is a concern. You know, all that stuff, I promise you, it's already been figured out. So it's going to allow for a lot of deals happening and to continue to happen. You know, we recently had, you know, what was it, Silver Lake. They went and they took the UFC and WWE. They're going to take them private. You know, I guess they got tired of all the background noise that was potentially going to hurt that business, you know, in total. You know, so that can make a company stronger. That can make a company stronger. So that's why the leveraged buyout arena, I feel, is going to be booming. Okay, and it's going to, again, as I said, it's going to allow private equity firms, it's going to allow companies to actually have greater control with what they're doing, reduce their fees, reduce what the cost factor involved with doing all this, and having it in a way that they don't have to go and have a transfer agent that is monitoring everything every second of the day, because everything, it is public. It is public, is there, people see it. You know, if you go on Hootdex, you go to hootdex.net, you go to the area that have digital basket tokens, DBTs. These DBTs, if you look at any one of these DBTs, there are holdings in those DBTs. You as an individual, you can just go there. You don't need an account. You can just go see what's happening there and see what's being traded in that account. That's how public it is. You don't need permission. You can just go look at it and you can see what's happening. And that is the future, my friends. That is the future. Yeah. You know, things are going to be very robust in the private equity space, you know, through innovation, through deal flow. You know, I guarantee you that you have a lot of things that are happening quietly that are going to burst at the seams, and it's going to create an entire environment of things. You know, traditionally, when you go and you have, whether it be a straight deal or a leveraged buyout, however it's structured, and you do a deal, there's an exit in mind. When you have that tokenization factor, that exit is not a stress factor. Basically, it allows for an operator to work on these companies, to build them and create that value. Okay, and then if they're going to go public, they do it in the time that they need. Like, the private equity firm doesn't have to be under the gun. You know, right now, your private equity firms that go and they raise their funds, and they raise up an enormous amount of money. They have the fund. Now they're looking for deals. If the deals aren't there, at some point in time, they have to give back the money, because whoever is putting up the money, whoever's investing in these funds, they don't want to sit for a year or two gaining nothing and paying fees for somebody just holding your money. That's insane. You know, so I also think that the deal-by-deal basis, you know, situations are going to become more prevalent as time goes on. Because if, you know, like, you have some investors, they don't want to think about anything. I'm putting my money in the fund and you do what you're going to do. Well, that's their prerogative, right? You know, but you also have some investors that want to understand, say, hey, I'm going to go cut you a X amount of million-dollar check to do a thing, and I trust your ability to do it, but tell me what you're going to do. At least this way, they're going in with something and saying, hey, this is what we're targeting. If it works out, we're going to make it happen, but we are looking for a company in this space. So they lay all the groundwork beforehand before they go and, you know, they get that that injection. So there are different ways to do it. I just think that the leveraged buyout structure is going to really, really, really expand. It's going to scale this year going into 2025. I think that, you know, you're going to have investors that are going to have a really big appetite for yield. And they're going to get the yield. And if they're able to do this in a dynamic fashion, that they're not reliant on any intermediaries, that they go and they don't even need to speak to anyone. If they like something, they just get involved. And they'll get their yield from a token. Isn't that fantastic? And it saves a lot of trouble, you know, for the private equity firms that are going to be doing it, too. You know, they don't have to go and deal with the stuff in the middle. All right. But anyway, this is my take on what's happening with innovation in the private equity space. I think there's a lot more that's going to happen, but this gives you, you know, a high level view of what I personally see happening. And I think it's happening now as we speak. And I think a lot of this stuff is going to happen faster than you think. All right. But on that note, you know, that is why I touched on the topic. I wanted to go over this stuff and share my, you know, unfiltered views on what could happen and what I see actually happening in the private equity space. All right. Now, on that note, I want to thank you for joining us on Money Never Sleeps. We will be back with you with another episode, and we'll pick another topic and go over it. But until then, I want all of you to have a profitable trading day, and you know, tune in, because we're going to make this show extremely interesting as the episodes go on. We think that this is a good vehicle to connect with the masses, and for me to share my views on what's going on in the world of finance. All right, again, thank you again. And you guys have a fantastic day.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
You're listening to UCW Radio in your face.
What is your major malfunction?
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you. And I thank you.
The views and opinions expressed on Money Never Sleeps Radio are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial advice. The host Louis Balafkef and guests of Money Never Sleeps Radio are not licensed financial advisors, and any investment decisions made based on information presented in this podcast are at the listener's own risk. Listeners are encouraged to consult with a qualified financial advisor or investment professional before making any investment decisions. The podcast hosts and guests do not endorse or recommend any specific investment strategies or products. All investments involve risk, and past performance is not indicative of future results.